Welcome to another AAT podcast, which this time is looking ahead to the important yearly task of completing and submitting forms P9D, P11D, and the P11DB annual return of Class 1A National Insurance contributions for the tax year 2009-10. This is one of those jobs that seem to be a real chore for many people, and too many employers and their advisors leave everything until the last minute, which is a bad mistake. In my humble opinion, it's never too soon to start, and much can be done throughout the tax year to make it easier when that deadline is getting closer. The statutory deadline for submission of the forms P9D, P11D and the P11DB return is the 6th of July 2010, which this year falls on a Tuesday. I certainly hope the sun is shining in Southend-on-Sea when I take those last-minute ones that I always end up with each year because some of my clients leave everything until the last minute. But wait a minute, because there are two earlier dates that may be relevant to the reporting of expense payments and benefits in kind. Surprisingly, the first date that concerns me is the 19th or 22nd of April 2010, the payment deadline for any outstanding Class 1 National Insurance contributions, where it is important to remember that some expense payments or benefits that will be reported on the P11D may have attracted a Class 1 National Insurance contributions liability. These are the blue boxes on the P11D. The obvious ones include taxable vouchers to be reported at Section C of the P11D, or school fees paid or reimbursed by the employer, which will be reported at Section M of the P11D and might be a brown box or a blue box. This needs checking now, not at the end of June or beginning of July, when it will be too late. The next date to think about is the 19th of May 2010 statutory date for submission of the P35 Employer's Annual Return, where on page 4 at Section 5, we are asked to say whether completed forms P11D and the P11DB return are due or are not due. An early decision should be made on whether P11Ds and the P11DB are due or are not. HMRC are likely to issue P11DB penalty notices if they are due and then nothing is received, so be careful what box you tick. Another key deadline to be noted is the 19th or 22nd of July, which is the Class 1A NIC's payment deadline. That's something everyone should put in their diary now and be ready to remind your client or your employer and in good time to ensure that the payment is received by HMRC no later than the 19th of July if paying by cheque, or that the monies are received in HMRC's new bank account by Wednesday the 22nd of July if paying by an acceptable electronic payment method. Penalties to be avoided. HMRC guidance warns us that a person who fails to make a return on Form P11D within the appropriate time limit may incur a penalty not exceeding £300, with a further penalty not exceeding £60 a day if the failure continues. We are told that there is also a penalty for making an incorrect return on Form P11D. That penalty is a maximum of £3,000 per P11D form. The late P11D penalty is also per form, and the more P11Ds there are, or should have been, or that should have been completed accurately before being submitted, the bigger the potential penalty bill is likely to be. There is also a hidden penalty that many employers end up suffering. This is the penalty of the employer paying the income tax due on the previously unreported or understated taxable expense payment or benefit in kind. It doesn't stop there either, because if the employer does agree to foot the bill for this demeanour, HMRC will gross up the income tax due to charge tax on the tax. That is, the employer will also have to pay the additional income tax due on the income tax paid for or on behalf of the employee or director. Picture this, where the employer fails to declare the medical insurance benefit that was provided to employees, say £1,000 for the whole family. The income tax payable for a basic rate taxpayer is £1,000 at 20%, in other words, £200. But when this is grossed up, at 100 over 80, the income tax due is now £250. It is much worse for the higher rate taxpayer, because the directors and our senior employees will pay tax at 40%. This time it is £1,000 at 40% or £400. But when that's grossed up at 100 over 60, the income tax due rises to £666.66, which can be very expensive for a number of employees or directors over a number of years. Do you begin to realise how important this P11D reporting game is now? Well, we're not finished yet as regards penalties, and we are yet to talk about interest charges. Chapter 25, paragraph 18 of HMRC's booklet 480 on expenses and benefits reminds us that there are also penalties for failing to make returns or for making an incorrect return of Class 1A national insurance contributions on the form P11DB return. If we file a P11DB return late, we will be charged a penalty of £100 per 50 employees for each month or part month that we are late in filing after the 6th of July 2010. The later we are, the more the penalties will add up. HMRC can also be expected to charge penalties under Regulation 81 of the Social Security Contributions Regulations 2001, with a maximum penalty of 100% of the omitted national insurance contribution liabilities. But of course, we should be able to reduce that figure to much below the 100%, although it's all still very costly. Late payment of the Class 1A national insurance contributions liabilities attracts an interest charge under Regulation 51 of the Income Tax Employment Regulations 1993. HMRC policy is not to mitigate interest charges. Clearly, we want to aim to submit these statutory returns accurately and on time, and also make sure we pay the right amount at the right time. Section 3. Where do we start? The sooner we start, the better, thinking first about who is doing what. Who is responsible for collating the information, and where does that information have to go? Unless the same person is collating the information, analysing it, and converting it into the data to be included on the P11D returns. Will somebody be checking the forms, whether that's a technical check or just proofreading to spot any obvious errors? We need to agree a timetable for the work with anyone else involved in completing and submitting these forms. How are the P11D returns to be submitted? Will it be manually using paper forms? Will it be using HMRC's CD-ROM or electronic submission using a third-party software? If so, has the P11D software been ordered? And do you have the latest version that you need to submit the returns? There is no statutory requirement to submit forms P11D online, but my own experience of submitting online with the aid of the PKF P11D software was very good last year. I would always have a few paper P11D forms as backup, and for later amendments, which always happens after one or two employees finally look at the copy P11D or P11D information, and usually only after they've been submitted to HMRC. But I have no fear of sending amendments in. Section 4. What information do we need? Any one of you who have attended a CPD course in the past will know that my starting point is always what was submitted last year. So hopefully your client or your employer has kept copies of last year's P11Ds. That will tell us what has been reported previously and therefore where we need to start in the information gathering process. There should be a permanent P11D file or a tax file with a P11D section, and this should be reviewed and updated as necessary. If there is no such file, I suggest you set one up now. If the only details reported were company cars and medical benefit, who do we need to contact to obtain details of any changes of cars? Do we know the list price of any new cars, including any second-hand car purchased? And do we know the CO2 emissions of the new cars? You might have to go to the garage where the car was bought, or to the leasing company. And whilst you could perhaps look these details up on a website, have you seen the purchase invoice to identify any accessories that need to be included in the price of the car for P11D reporting? Who can check and confirm that there was no private fuel provided to any company car driver? Do we have details of the medical insurance premiums paid by the company? And who is included in the scheme? If we need to report other expense payments and or benefits in kind, where do we get that information? Finance or accounts should be able to provide details from the ledgers, and perhaps HR or personnel, or whoever takes responsibility for such matters, will be able to tell us about any loans made to employees, or anyone who has been relocated, where there may be a reporting requirement. Is the payroll run in-house, or do we need to ask a payroll bureau for details of any relevant payroll deductions, such as loan repayments? Where we have to go outside of the employer to obtain the information, we need to give any third party plenty of notice. It may be advisable to send them a copy of what they provided last year, which might then make it easier for them to find it this time. One of the most time-consuming aspects, especially if the employer does not have a PLMD dispensation, will be to analyse the expense and petty cash claims of the directors and employees. And yes, I did also include petty cash in what needs to be looked at. We also need to remember the company credit cards, which will also need to be analysed to identify any reportable items. I can assure you that HMRC employer compliance officers will not miss them when they come to inspect the records. Do directors and employees have to be reminded to submit their March expenses earlier than usual? Do they have to be reminded to repay any private mileage to avoid the employer having to report a company car fuel benefit, which could prove very expensive? In the absence of a PLMD dispensation, the PLMDs should strictly report all expense payments, whether reimbursed to the director or employee, or even where the costs were met directly by the employer. That could be via an account with the supplier, and might include a travel agent, taxi company, or perhaps flights booked directly with an airline. Section 5. What can we exclude from reporting? Is there a valid PLMD dispensation that allows us to exclude any expense payments or benefits from the reporting chain? Most employers should have a dispensation to exclude from the reporting chain such items as business travel and subsistence costs, including accommodation costs at a temporary workplace, such as the conference hotel. The dispensation should also include business telephone and entertaining costs, and professional fees or subscriptions, such as your AAT, ACCA, or SEMA subscriptions, if they're paid by the employer. The dispensation could also include other items specifically relevant to a particular employer or employment. You should have a look at Chapter 5 of HMRC's Booklet 480, Expenses and Benefits Guide, because that will tell you what expense payments or benefits in kind are exempt or are covered by an extra statutory concession and therefore do not need to be reported on Form P11D. Next, does the company have a PAY settlement agreement where the income tax liability on certain expense payments and or benefits in kind are to be paid for by the employer in an agreement with HMRC? If there is one, we need to know what's included, because those costs should not be doubly reported on the P11D forms. Section 6, applying for a P11D dispensation. HMRC has recently issued new guidance about applying for a P11D dispensation, clearly trying to encourage more employers to apply for dispensations to reduce the reporting burden, and for HMRC officers, the time wasted in examining expenses and benefits that can be matched by a deduction and should therefore be excluded from reporting. HMRC has, at last, produced an online application form as an alternative to the Form P11DX paper application form, although you can still use that format if you're more comfortable with it. Postal applications should now be sent to a centralised unit and addressed to the Employer Support Team, HMRC, Bowback House, 299 Silbury, that's S for Sugar, ILB for Baker, URY, Boulevard, Witten, WITAN, Gate West, Milton Keynes, Buckinghamshire, and the postcode is M for Mother, K for Kevin, 9, 1, N for Norman, G for Gareth. I have been telling AAT audiences over the last couple of years that HMRC want us to apply for dispensations for our clients, and not only for large employers. The most recent guidance clearly shows that HMRC is prepared to issue dispensations to all employers, including businesses controlled by family directors. The guidance says that employers must have an independent system for checking and authorising expense claims, with someone other than the employee or director checking that. The amount claimed mustn't be excessive. The claim mustn't include disallowable items. If there is no independent system, for example, where there is a sole director and no other employees, a dispensation will only be issued if all expense claims are supported by receipts for the expenditure, if we're able to demonstrate that the claim relates to expenditure that can be covered by a dispensation. HMRC says that receipts may be sufficient for this purpose, but if not, the employer must retain additional information to satisfy an officer at any future inspection. At the time of recording this podcast, there is only a month to go to the end of the 2009 tax year, and HMRC will not normally backdate a dispensation beyond the current year. I would say that even if you are too late to apply for a dispensation for 2009-10, why not act now and apply for a dispensation to apply from the 6th of April 2010, so that the task will at least be easier next year? Section 7 Summary. The calculation of the cash equivalent of reportable expense payments and benefits in kind is an onerous task, but it's a necessary one, and the cost of getting it wrong, including missing the statutory deadlines, is potentially very expensive. This podcast is about giving you pointers to help you prepare, and the key is starting early. However, more help is available from the AAT. The AAT are again putting on full-day CPD courses for its members, and non-members are welcome too, where I will be looking in depth at calculating the reportable expense payments and benefits in kind. We will have plenty of working examples, and I will be able to answer all your technical questions, as well as giving you practical solutions and advice on what to do before you submit the P9Ds, P11Ds, and the P11DB return of Class 1A National Insurance Contributions, for your employer or for your clients. The first CPD course will be in Birmingham on Saturday the 8th of May, then in London on the 15th of May and Ipswich on Monday the 17th of May, and finally in Bournemouth on Saturday the 5th of June 2010. Places may be limited by the size of the venue, so please book early and I will see you there. Thank you.